Well, we are picking up from a previous episode, episode number 50, where we left off where Thorin, Oakenshield, Bilbo, and their group of dwarves were under the Lonely Mountain, and they had the treasure of the now killed dragon, Smaug, but the lake men and the wood elves had some interest in claiming some of that treasure. And so now we're looking at a standoff situation. So we're gonna pick the story up from there on this episode number 53 of the DJMCloud.com podcast with me, Dan McKeown, and with Jessica McKeown.
Hi.
So this is a retelling of the J.R.R. Tolkien book, The Hobbit, and it is going to be a forthcoming movie. Actually, three of them.
Far to the east, over ranges and rivers, lies a single solitary peak. The dwarves are determined to reclaim their homeland.
So there we hear Ian McKellen as Gandalf reprising his role from the previous Lord of the Rings movies, and he's talking about how there's the mountain far to the east. Now, of course, this is referring to the early part of the story. Now, they've announced there's going to be three Hobbit movies by directed by Peter Jackson that are on their way out originally. There's going to be maybe one and then two, and they're going to expand to three movies. Now, The Hobbit is a very, famous and well-loved story, but it is, 200-some pages. It's not nearly as long as any of the three of the Lord of the Rings books. We're going to see that there is quite a good deal of storyline, both in the book narrated very explicitly and also suggested and sort of retold in the book. So we're looking at Bilbo being holed up in the mountain with the dwarves. And because they're around all this gold, there's a possibility that Thorin, the leader of the dwarves, is getting dragon sickness or whatever they call it, where you get very covetous of the gold. And he's not really thinking rationally. Maybe he should divide this. Certainly Bilbo just wants to kind of be done with the adventure. Because remember, as we mentioned before, the dragon, Smaug, was killed attacking Lake Town. The people of Lake Town want some compensation. The elves want something. So Bilbo decides to actually sneak out. And he is going to the camp of the enemy by sneaking out, taking over the watch, and then sneaking out. And he takes this great jewel that the dragon had that is sort of the royal elf kind of heirloom, but Bilbo found it first and he put it in his pocket, so now he's taking it out to the elves, I guess, to kind of as a peace offering. And you know, he doesn't want a fight, but the two sides are bracing for a fight. But while he's carrying out this diplomatic mission behind enemy lines, he sees a cloaked fellow. It turns out to be Gandalf. So now the dwarves and Bilbo have been without Gandalf for a long time, and we're looking at his first reappearance in the story for a while. Now, what has Gandalf been doing in this time? Now, in the first part, and this is within the scope that'll probably be in the first movie. Although, of course, this is all very unclear. You know, but in the first Hobbit movie, we after the group escapes with the eagles away from the wolves and the goblins, they make their way to the house of Beorn. Beorn is the guy who can appear as a bear or as a man. And he's the one that they stayed with before they went further east on toward Mirkwood. He's the one that let them use his ponies for a while, but only until they got to the edge of Mirkwood. And so we remember that Gandalf at this point split off. Now, after they saw Beorn and after they got to the edge of the Mirkwood Forest, they split off, and Gandalf headed south. Now, at this point in the story where Bilbo is holed up in the mountain and he sneaks out, Bilbo and the dwarves have already gone through Mirkwood, been captured by elves, and then escaped in the barrels, and made their way to Lake Town, been celebrated there, made their way up to the Lonely Mountain, and then gotten Smaug agitated, and then so the dragon went out and fought the lake men, as they're called, and you know, then destroyed their town, but was killed there. And so since that's all happened, Gandalf hasn't been around. And so there are times when Bilbo is expecting Gandalf to come back in the book, but you know, so far he hadn't, until he sees him in that camp. And so he's trying to figure out what's going on. Well, Gandalf is friendly with elves too, so he doesn't really, although he might expect some of the treasure from the dwarves for helping them, he doesn't really, isn't really dug in like on this. He's you know, friendly with the elves too, so he's in their camp. But you know, what has he been doing, you know, all this time? Well, it involves elves, and it actually goes back to characters people that know the Lord of the Rings movies would be familiar with, including Galadriel. So Galadriel is the elf that's played by Kate Blanchett, and she has a part in this movie. Now, she is not mentioned explicitly, I don't think, in the Hobbit book, but Gandalf, although only like retells his kind of subplot later to Bilbo, after the events that we're describing, where they're under the mountain still. So, what has been happening this time? Why did Gandalf see fit to leave the group? Well, he had very pressing business in the south of Mirkwood. Now, as the dwarves are making their way with Bilbo through the northern part of Mirkwood, there's this area called like Dol Guldur or something that's in the southern part of Mirkwood. Now, this is the story that is going to be expanded greatly in the movie. And it's going to involve Elrond, Galadriel, and also Radagast, who is another wizard. So Gandalf, I think he calls him a cousin, although maybe just like a member of his order of wizards or something like that is what that means. But Radagast is going to be involved too. And the group, this group is going to form something called the White Council, which is going to be called because of a very evil figure called the Necromancer. Now, one of the people that's in the White Council that's fighting the Necromancer is Saruman. So, in fact, Christopher Lee, the guy who played Saruman in the earlier movies, is also going to reprise his role as Saruman in The Hobbit. Now, remember in the first Lord of the Rings movie, how when Gandalf realizes there's issues with the ring, he says he can go get the counsel of Saruman. He considers him a wise advisor, right? And he comes very innocently to ask him what's going on. And Saruman, at that point in the movie, I think, is turning very definitively toward the side of Sauron, right? I think in the books it's more ambiguous. But You know, so Saruman is on the White Council, and he's working to get to fight the Necromancer. So, what do you think so far?
I think it sounds like a really exciting close to a good novel.
Yeah, like there's really like a lot to go, you know, a lot to explore in these two different plots, because they're very separate for probably a lot of the movie, but there's a lot of questions about how they're going to connect these, because, you know, maybe the books don't answer every question, and then maybe the movie won't go with every exact, you know, everything said in the book exactly, you know. I think so.
Yeah, that rarely happens.
Right. So we're gonna see some sort of, you know, White Council fighting the Necromancer. Now, the question that that people might be asking when they're watching the movie and see this character is, you know, who is the Necromancer? And I think in order to kind of work with people's familiarity, there's going to be a scene, I think, early on in The Hobbit to set the stage for all this.
Okay.
Where the Ringwraiths are going to be found to be loose. Because I think they're supposed to be, you know, not mortal or something, but they were sealed in a tomb, at least in this movie storyline, apparently. According to, like, previews or whatever, they were sealed in the tomb of the Nazgul or something like that, and they are, they're allowed to be freed from it. They're someone breaks the magic, breaks the spell on their like tomb prison. Because of, I guess if you going back further, you know, like the ring in the age of Bilbo Baggins, there's not as much, of concern about the ring. And now, you know, the Nazgul appear to be loose. And so that's something Gandalf is maybe going to find out, maybe from Radagast, his the other wizard, Radagast the Brown. Maybe he's going to find that out early. Now, one of the things about Radagast, I guess, is that he's a friend of animals and birds. So I guess, like, he's going to have, like, birds in his hat and stuff like that. He's going to be, like, a very, like, foresty kind of wizard.
Yeah, it's going to be so neat to see how they translate the characters onto the screen with the technology they have today, both in prop making and with, you know, graphics and animation and green screens, and it'll just be phenomenal.
So the Necromancer is the person that all these different characters are coming together to fight. So we've got, you know, when we see this jailbreak or whatever of the Ringwraiths, it starts us wondering, like, well, who else is there out there? And so apparently, and I don't know how they're really going to connect this, because maybe the Necromancer will take a physical form. He might be like a Nazgul, or he might be more like a man, but probably very, I don't know, maybe very scary looking, maybe not. But the Necromancer, I think it's going to be implied to the audience that the Necromancer is Sauron.
Oh, okay.
So this isn't the amorphous spirit of evil that's symbolized in the movies by the eye, But, you know, he's just like a like an evil force, sort of a spiritual evil force controlling things. Like, and, you know, the well, in this storyline, the White Council, and this is over the three Hobbit movies, I think, but maybe some of this is earlier. The White Council expels the Necromancer from the Mirkwood Forest. But Gandalf and Elrond, the elf, at the end are talking, and they seem to think that, well, I think there's some sense that it would be better to have done more about him. And the fact is, maybe he just wanted to move to Mordor. And in fact, this is where he's setting up shop. So if anything, like Sauron... will be defeated as the Necromancer in the Hobbit movies, but of course they have to set up, because these events happen before the Lord of the Rings movies, they're setting up that Sauron will go to Mordor and make, you know, a big, you know, play for, you know, the whole Middle Earth. Now, when we're talking about the dragon, here's a question, right? Will the dragon associate with the Necromancer?
I don't see why not.
Right, because he can go out and fly and come back. He can do whatever he wants. And in fact, he does. He doesn't just stay with his treasure, though he usually just lays around on his treasure and doesn't really do much with it, but just enjoys having it. You know, like he's just, you know, he's got a huge pile of treasure. But then he goes to harass and attack the people of Lake Town because he thinks they're sending people. He doesn't know it's dwarves and Hobbit that have come. He thinks it's men, right? So he goes to Lake Town to attack them, and... So the dragon, like, he could fly out to Mirkwood and visit the Necromancer at some point. Well, anyway, now Gandalf will have, at least for now, defeated Sauron in the form of the Necromancer, expelling him from the Mirkwood Forest in the southern part. And now Gandalf is going to head up north, and he's going to go to the camp of the elves near the Lonely Mountain. And of course the dwarves and Bilbo are under the Lonely Mountain, and there's a standoff going on. So that's where we're back to, right? So now we're going to move forward from that point that I was actually at before, and conclude the story.
Okay, sounds great.
Well, there's one loose end that we haven't accounted for in the first part of our retelling of The Hobbit. We considered the clash with the goblins. Now, I know, this story is just being told from my recall, and I'm not sure I even got it all right the first time through, but, you know, I talked about the trolls. The fact is Gandalf saved them from the trolls because, he got them confused. It wasn't Bilbo, but from the goblins, this was a very complicated situation with them getting, captured and escaping, but they killed the great goblin. Now, there's this... Goblin king. I don't know if his name is Azog or something like that. This isn't a king. This is like a chieftain, but he's just a really big goblin. And you know that the goblins usually goblin in The Hobbit. But I've heard it said that goblin and orc are more or less interchangeable. Now, I think some people might say that the goblins are the ones that are more in the mountains, and even in, like, the Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship of the Ring, they fight these smaller kind of monstrous creatures that are goblins. But okay, so what if we went back, way back into the storyline? Now, there's a lot of Tolkien enthusiasts out there, right? There's this podcast. I have a link in the show notes at djmcloud.com to look at podcast 53. And there's a link to a podcast called The Tolkien Professor. And there's several other ones. There's a lot of lore. There's other books like the Silmarillion, there's the Lord of the Rings, there's a lot of other source material, including more unofficial stuff written by Christopher Tolkien. And so, you know, of course, along with the original source material by J.R.R. Tolkien, you know, so I would, you know, if you look at all that, there's, you know, sort of mythic origins to some of these creatures. So, accepting for now that goblins and orcs are basically the same thing, like, if we go back, like, why is there such a thing? And, I guess the original boss of Sauron, a guy called Morgoth, actually created orcs because he, well, do you know how you create an orc?
How do you create an orc?
I guess you take an elf and you do terrible deprivations to it, and I don't know, torture the civilization out of it. I don't know if they use some, there's some legend of like that though, that they were, you know, originally made from elves. But anyway, so they play an important role in the Lord of the Rings, but they seem very servile, don't they?
They do.
Well, I guess in the lore, they're, you know, now we're talking about goblins here in the Hobbit, but they seem more organized. Now they are vulgar and violent and disgusting, but maybe there's a little bit more organization, a little more independence here. They have a king, they have the Great Goblin. Anyway, so the Great Goblin has been killed, and it raised rage because there have been many wars, and there have been wars between goblins and elves, and there have been wars between dwarves and goblins. And so they have a lot of vengeance that they want on those dwarves. They kind of figured out that a party of dwarves and a hobbit, and a wizard were going through, and they want, you know, vengeance. And so even though the eagles carried them well ahead, well, that's a loose thread. Yes, the eagles bought the dwarves and Gandalf and Bilbo a good deal of time by taking them over to Beorn's place, or near there. And, you know, that's good, but apparently the goblins kept pursuing. So just as these groups are in a standoff at the foot of the Lonely Mountain, where the dwarves and Bilbo are dug underneath, and Bilbo is trying to make peace, but, you know, he's not sure what, you know, he can do, and then the elves and the men are ready, you know, maybe to attack the mountain, well, or besiege it, all of a sudden goblins come. And not only that, but with wolves, some of them riding on wolves. So goblins riding on wolves come and attack, and all of a sudden, at the same time, or just a little earlier, a group of allied dwarves, a group of dwarves that had come, I guess, to help Thorin under the mountain, came, and the dwarves and the elves were literally about to start fighting as the goblins come around the corner.
Wow.
So at the foot of the Lonely Mountain, there's an epic fight that goes on. It's known as the Battle of Five Armies.
Okay.
And if we look at the some of the actual source material from the Hobbit book, it says it was a terrible battle, the most dreadful of all Bilbo's experiences, and the one which at the time he hated most, which is to say it was the one he was most proud of and most fond of recalling long afterwards, although he was quite unimportant in it, unquote. And, you know, and you're going to see, like, I think probably in the third movie, this Battle of Five Armies. So it gets very, very nasty, and goblins just keep coming. As some scenes in Lord of the Rings, there seems to be, like, a long, you know, line of goblins in battles, and they'll attack, and, you know, in waves. And so the elves and the lake men and the dwarves are fighting. They're having, you know, a hard time, and then Thorin finally comes out with his party of dwarves from under the mountain. They come in and attack on, you know, a flank or whatever, and then the goblins just keep coming, and it's just terrible. And, you know, Gandalf is involved, I guess, but it's just devastating waves of goblin attacks and wolves and whatever. So it's a lot of losses on all sides, but it just continues to be you know, awful. And then there's one more group of, you know, well, the, you know, who comes out over the horizon flying in the air to help the elves and the dwarves?
Who?
They're flying. They're allies of Gandalf.
Birds? What kind of birds?
Eagles.
Oh, okay.
Now, you know, the eagle is involved in the Lord of the Rings storyline.
How is the eagle involved there?
After Sam and Frodo managed to stumble their way into throwing the ring into Mount Doom in Mordor, the eagle comes and swoops and picks them up.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Well, this is a whole, you know, battalion of eagles that come in and fight the goblins.
Wow, that would be cool.
And so this is the next wave of the battle, and the eagles have a good amount of help to offer, but the battle is still extremely tense, and one more ally comes to help the dwarves and the men and the elves and the eagles. And that's a character that we've already encountered in the story.
Okay.
It's the guy Bjorn, who can appear as a man or as a bear.
Right.
And who lent them supplies and a place to stay along their way. And he has come out and he is appearing as an enormous giant bear. And so that is another, the last thing that tips the scales in favor. And the elves and the other warriors pursue the goblins down the river running and the forest river and away from the foot of the mountain. And after much searching for him, Bilbo remembers that he had used the ring before he passed out in battle to disappear.
Oh, right.
So now he's lucky to take the ring off in time to be found as they're picking up the battlefield with all the dead and the piles of dead goblins.
Yeah, and we see that in the Lord of the Rings when he puts the ring on and disappears.
Absolutely. At the beginning of the Fellowship of the Ring movies, Bilbo still has the ring in that storyline, right? So, you know, he's accustomed to using it kind of casually. Now, I guess because the Nazgul are near approaching, and because of all the intensity of what's going on at Mordor, when Frodo puts it on, it's pretty crazy and terrifying. But Bilbo doesn't seem to have the same. Now, actually, over time, I think, you know, he has the same kind of attrition that, you know, it keeps people or hobbits or creatures or whatever appearing youthful, but it sort of drains away things. And so the way Frodo is by the end of the Return of the King and,
right,
and things like that. So Bilbo has that, you know, on the way, but yeah, this is a time when he just uses it to get in and out of situations, you know, use it, to sneak into, where the dragon was. And though he got burned, you know, by the dragon's fire, he still got away where he probably wouldn't have if he hadn't been able to disappear. And, you know, so definitely, like a you know, a little more casual use of the ring in this storyline. So the battle happened, and it was very destructive and terrible. And after that, Thorin Oakenshield dies, and you know, so the leader of the dwarves, the king of the dwarves, dies in the battle, and Bilbo is able to say goodbye, and they, because they had a falling out, because Bilbo, remember, had given the Arkenstone away, Thorin had been very upset and cast him out, you know, of his party. So before he dies, he's able to take that back. And after getting some of the treasure, Bilbo and Gandalf's head back, and they are traveling with Bjorn, and then they stop in Rivendell on the way back, where Elrond and, you know, other elves are. And that, you know, of course, is in the the Lord of the Rings movies, the yeah. Rivendell and stuff. So this is an age where the elves haven't lost quite as many of their powers, but the power is diminishing, like in the Lord of the Rings age. So in the Hobbit age, the dragons are very powerful. So Bilbo makes his way back to the Shire, and that has been podcast 53 of the DJMCloud.com podcast. It's been recorded October 17th, 2012.
Where can I find Thai food?
I found 3 Thai restaurants barely close to you.
Did you get to finish everything you were saying?
Yep.